Hey, I'm Carmel Holt, and this is SheRose Radio. This hour was created to turn up the volume of women's voices in song and conversation across genres and generations. On SheRose, we feature the trailblazers and the new visionaries. And this week, we have a super special edition of SheRose for you in celebration of Mary Chapin Carpenter's 17th studio album, Personal History. In this hour, we'll take you backstage at the historic Bardavon 1869 Opera House in Poughkeepsie, New York, where I spent a little over an hour sitting with Mary Chapin before her soundcheck that afternoon, talking about the inspirations and process of writing and recording the new album, which was produced by Josh Kaufman of Bonnie Light Horseman and recorded at Peter Gabriel's Real World Studios in England, where Mary Chapin has recorded her last four albums. Over her nearly four-decade recording career, which began with her Columbia Records debut, Hometown Girl, in 1987, Mary Chapin Carpenter has sold over 17 million records, has earned five Grammy Awards and 18 nominations, two Country Music Association Awards, two Academy of Country Music Awards. She's one of only 22 female members of the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, and she's a recipient of the 2023 ACM Honors Poets Award. As she prepares to head back out on the road for the next leg of her tour in support of the new album, I'm so thrilled to welcome Mary Chapin Carpenter as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. I am so honored to have Mary Chapin Carpenter here. Not to make you blush, but what a big deal for me to have you on SheRose.
Very kind of you. Thank you.
Congratulations on this amazing new album.
Oh, thanks.
Personal History.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I wanted to start today talking about writing your personal history in song. Mm.
Well, I'll start at the point at which, you know, I started to really focus in on the songs, which was like in 2020. I had released my previous record, The Dirt and the Stars, that August, I think. And of course, like so many other people, I mean, we had planned to release it with a tour and all that, and that was not going to happen. And then what else was there to do except start writing songs again? And, you know, I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia in a very sort of rural, isolated place. And I, you know, had a lot of time on my hands, as you may imagine. And the title song from Personal History, it's called What Did You Miss? And that song was like the way in, you know, sketching out how I was navigating that time. And the very last verse stating that, you know, I've been walking in circles for so long, unwinding the mystery, I've been writing it down song by song as a personal history. In that moment of sort of putting that lyric together, it just felt like this is the roadmap to the other songs that ended up on the record. And it just felt like, you know, that moment where you know you're beginning a project and it felt like, okay, I know where I'm going with this.
So that moment where you know that it's, okay, we're starting something here.
It's what it felt like, yes, yeah. For sure.
So over the three decades plus that you've been at this, when would you say that you locked into recognizing that feeling?
I feel like I recognized it pretty late. Like, oh, in other yeah? words, that moment that I think I just described to you.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, going back a little bit, one of my favorite novelists is Elizabeth Strout. Yeah. She wrote Olive Kittredge, My Name is Lucy Barton,
yeah,
many wonderful novels. And My Name is Lucy Barton in particular has this moment where the narrator is taking a creative writing course and the instructor, I'm paraphrasing wildly here, but the instructor says to her, don't worry about story. We all have one story, but we tell it many different ways. And I remember when I was reading that novel a number of years ago, you know, I had an intake of breath very suddenly, like, oh, that's, like, I sort of said it out loud in a way to myself. That's what the songs are. That's, you know, like all these years of writing songs, that's my one story, but I'm telling it in many different ways.
Wow.
That's where all the songs come from. That's what it felt like to me. It was like this moment of recognition that, you know, I've always used songwriting as a, not like, I've always been averse to the term confessional songwriting. I don't feel like it's about confessing anything. I think it's simply looking for understanding, deconstructing experiences in your life or emotions and trying to describe them in song. And it's a way of navigating your emotions and the world and figuring out where you belong on this planet somehow. I mean, songwriting is just my particular way that I found to express myself. And it's always sort of made sense to me in the sense that I have always been a shy person and sort of, you know, quiet. And it was the way that I could express myself that felt comfortable, because whatever other methods there may have been, I wasn't comfortable doing those. Mm-hmm. So songwriting just felt like this way to be in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that story in My Name is Lucy Parton, it really spoke to me. And then when I was writing, you know, What Did You Miss? The title song for Personal History, that lyric, when I say I'm unwinding the mystery, it's like I'm just speaking about living life in general. It's like life is mysterious and it's really great and it's hard and it's all of those things, but writing it down song by song has always made sense to me. Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to explain.
How did you feel when you felt so lonely that you never believed you'd be whole again? Autumn still shone so gold and holy, and all we could do was remember when. I've been walking in circles for so long, unwinding the mystery. I've been writing it down song by song as a personal history. Personal history. Personal history.
That's What Did You Miss? The title song to the new Mary Chapin Carpenter album, Personal History, her 17th studio album. She's here with us on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. You were telling us about writing this album during the pandemic, that it started with that song and started in 2020, that first year. And I started Shiro's in 2020.
Oh, okay.
And it was an interesting time to start interviewing women about music and being in the industry, because, and I mean, I couldn't have known this then, but it was such a forced moment of reflection.
Yes.
And vulnerability.
Yes.
And cracked a lot of us wide open. Mm-hmm. And in all of the press materials that were sent to me for talking to you today, and every interview that I've heard so far, it's, you know, kind of referred to this album as your most personal yet, your most autobiographical. And putting in it in that framework, I think, well, that kind of makes sense.
I guess. And yet, if I look back on the albums that I've made, they all feel very personal.
Right.
But maybe it's always our most recent one that just feels, you know, most fresh in our minds as it relates to us. I'm not sure. Yeah. But having said that, I don't know how much more I could have, you know, exposed myself in this regard. But I say that in a very positive way. It's like lots of memories and the importance of time and place and identity and meaning and purpose and all of those things are tied up in the record.
I was thinking about the process of writing memoirs and how, when I've spoken with artists who have also written memoirs and recorded records, sometimes they go hand in hand.
Right.
You have not written a memoir yet.
I have not.
Okay. So this is maybe the closest that we've gotten so far?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. But I understand that this is not a chronological telling.
Not at all. Not at all. It does, you know, time is fluid. It goes back and forth. And and even in the title song, it's sort of sketching out that first year, as we've discussed, of the pandemic and the isolation and all of that. But in the what I think of as the choruses, it goes back in time. Like, I wish I was in a bar with my friends dancing and getting buzzed off on the porch and drinking beer with my teenage self. And, you know, it's just like time is going back and forth, because I found myself a lot of that year. I don't know if nostalgia is the right word. I don't know if reminiscing is the right word. It's just that I found myself like, what did I miss? I missed these things that may not have been in my life for years and years and years, but again, they're occurring to me as I was just existing in that time. And it's weird how that happens, but, you know, our memories aren't chronological either.
Of course.
Right.
Was there anything that cropped up for you that sort of surprised you?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I mean, I think that's a great question, but I honestly don't think that anything was surprising to me. If anything, mm-hmm. I felt that once I had started going down that path, the things that I did start to dwell on and memories that I was sort of laboring to pull in and examine, they were things that I really wanted to be with. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't surprises. They weren't uncomfortable. It's almost like, remember when you're taught to meditate and often you're sort of, imagine that, you know, clouds are going by and you're not trying to just focus on one, you're just letting them go by. It felt like that, if that makes any sense.
Totally.
Like I was comfortable with really sort of reliving things and reexamining and, you know, just excavating thoughts and feelings and emotions, even if they were many, many years in the past.
So do you want to take us to another song on this record and to a point in time?
Or maybe you
maybe
pick something.
I can? Okay, sure. Well, why don't we talk about Girl and Her Dog?
Okay.
Before I learned about what sparked this song, I heard this very autobiographically, because I know you're a big dog person.
Yeah.
I'm a big dog person.
I knew I liked you.
And I'm also a solo middle-aged woman with a dog. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this song could be about me. Thank you, Mary Chapin. So yeah, what can you tell us about this song?
Well, I'll share with you what I try to speak to every night on stage in introducing the song. As I mentioned, you know, I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, in a rural, very beautiful place, actually. And in the summer, it's awfully hot. And if you want to beat the heat and walk your dog, we like to go to this beautiful place nearby that has miles of gravel roads that you can walk. And they open at sunrise, they close at sunset. It's just beautiful. And one day, Angus, my dog, and I were walking the gravel paths, and I heard a car coming behind us. So we stepped off the path to let it go by, and it was this beautiful, cool, old vintage pickup truck with a window in the back of the cab so you could see the back of the head of whoever was driving and the passengers. And it was a beautiful older woman with salt and pepper hair and a long braid down her back, and her two companions were dogs. And as she disappeared into the distance, I just was really charmed by just this vision disappearing. And I started to, like, as I was walking with Angus after that, I just started making up this life for her, as one does. And I imagined that she lived nearby, maybe she lives on a farm near there, and she'd finished walking her pups and she was on her way back home, and she would have another cup of coffee in her garden. And then I like to write at my kitchen table, so I put her at her kitchen table after her coffee, and she was going to probably start work on her new novel or her latest volume of poetry or something. And then in that afternoon, maybe she'd go down to the bottom of her garden where she has a painting studio and she's working on paintings. And so obviously what I'm creating for her was a very creative life and a very, in my mind, a very beautiful life and a rich life. And it was around the time that I saw her, you know, driving by, I had turned 60. And, you know, that is a heavy number in our society and in our culture, particularly for women.
Oh, yeah.
And I know so many older, accomplished, brilliant, amazing women who have all said to me that when they turned 60, they not only added a year to their age, but they started to feel invisible in the world. And I remember thinking, that's crazy. That's just bonkers, you know? But until you experience it, it's going to seem bonkers. It's going to seem crazy. And then I started to feel that in my own life in just different ways. Some very, very subtle, some more overt, but I got it. I understood what they meant. And that started to make me feel like kind of twirly, like, what is going on here? What does this mean? And I really sat with myself for a long time. Yeah. And I remembered that woman driving in the distance with her dogs and that story of her life that I had been making up. And I started, for me, I felt like I was connecting the dots. And I think the reason I made up that story is that I was really actually trying to figure out what my life was supposed to look like in this new season, you know? And who am I? What am I doing? I mean, I'm so grateful that I'm out here and playing music and making records and all of those things. But it was like a bigger kind of, who am I? What am I doing? What is life? You know, what does this mean? All of that. And I was just looking for like a mentor or examples. And I realized I was really comforted and inspired by that life that I made up for that woman. And then I realized in the same moment, I was trying to imagine that life for myself. And I was trying to figure it out. And she became, rightly or wrongly, for better or for worse, she became this visual kind of thing for me. And after I took that in, I realized that this new season, to use a cliche, but it's true, it felt wonderful. It felt full of art and creativity, energy, not caring what people think, which is one of the gifts of growing older. Books, art, music, just the things that you can immerse yourself in. And not that you couldn't do it at a younger age, but you just have more appreciation for it somehow as you grow older and you're trying to just find your place in the world, you know, and not feel invisible. Or when that happens, not care, you know? And so I felt comfort. I felt inspired. I felt all of those things. And then eventually I wrote that song about that day when I was walking with Angus and the meditation about what it means to grow older and what matters. And maybe it's just a cup of coffee and hoping it doesn't rain on your walk. And it's that simple sometimes.
Everyone asks when you're growing up, who do you want to be? I never had an answer, couldn't figure out why I couldn't see myself as some future other, no one's partner, no one's mother, no one's answer, no one's lover, nobody but me. But the older I get, the more I see that more by itself never worked for me. Keeping it simple as it can be, walking along, just him and me. Mornings here with a coffee cup, songs in my head looking up. If the rain holds off, we'll be in luck. But we're lucky anyway.
That's Girl and Her Dog from the new Mary Chapin Carpenter album, Personal History, her 17th studio release. She's our guest today on this special edition of the She Rose Radio Hour. I'm Carmel Holt. Stay with us for part two, coming up after the break.
There is more from Carmel Holt and She Rose Radio coming up right after this here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Malachi Coons. We receive support from The Sewing Room, hosting the Cultivating Communities Summit September 22nd through 23rd in Brainerd. This two-day event features keynotes, interactive workshops, live music, and a special film screening. Full details can be found at sewingroom.org. And now, a message paid for by the Minnesota Department of Health. Sometimes you just need to talk about it, but it can be hard to find someone who really listens. That's why there is 988, with support that meets you where you are. Confidential and staffed by trained folks who want to help when you need someone to talk to. Call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org. You can help shape the future of our cultural programming by taking the survey. Find the link at kaxe.org. Now back to Shiro's Radio.
Welcome back to Shiro's Radio. I'm Carmel Holt. This week we have a very special edition of the Radio Hour in conversation with Mary Chapin Carpenter. She's celebrating the release of her 17th studio album, Personal History. At the end of part one, we heard the story behind her new song, Girl and Her Dog, and some of that track. I feel like we could almost spend the entire episode talking about that song and some of the things that you said, which are so eloquent, and I feel myself getting emotional right now, you know, because that experience specifically for women is so hard to understand, even though you hear it until you get there.
Yeah.
And part of the story that hit me especially hard was like, what is expected of us, what we expect for ourselves, how much of that is true based on what we're getting from society, how we're told that it's supposed to play out for us.
Like, is there a deadline or something?
Exactly.
Like, and I will tell you, I was recently interviewed by someone who said, in reference, I suppose, to my age, why are you still doing this? I started laughing. Like, what kind of question is that? Like, is there a deadline in your mind? I just thought it was strange. Like, and I, again, it came from a significantly younger person, and not to, you know, bash that person, but I think you're right. Until you get to that place and until you start to experience the ageism that permeates our culture and certainly the business that we're in, it's hard to explain it until you experience it. But I found that question, like, why are you still doing this? Like, well, why wouldn't I? I have much to say. And it's like, let's face it, the way the music business works and all that, again, it's all sort of focused on youth and what's the shiniest new thing and all of that. But I think it's unfortunate that the constituency that exists for an older person's viewpoint, man or woman, is forgotten about. And if anything, I just felt like this was not my mission, but it's, as I've been talking about this new record, more and more I'm sort of realizing that I want to speak to that constituency. And again, my hope would always be that no matter what age, whatever you look like, whatever you do in your life, we all hope that something resonates with someone, no matter where they are in their lives. And that can't always be true, but you hope for it. And again, I don't think this is a record that's just for people my age.
Definitely not.
At all.
Oh my God. And that's why, I mean, fight me. Anyone, you can fight me on this, but I am really on about this and talk about it a lot on this show with people of all ages about how important it is to push through the youth-obsessed music industry and show up regardless of what stage of life you're at, because women are not well represented in the older phases, middle-aged phases even. I mean, I've talked to, you know, 20-somethings on this show who are being told that they have to hurry up because they're going to age out. I've talked to women who are, I am serious.
That is so horrible.
Literally, this is in like within the last four years. This is today. This is not like, oh, it used to be so hard for women. No, no, no. This is like now.
That ranks right up there with that dreadful man who owns Spotify, Daniel Ek, who
100%.
Says, who says like, you know, you can't take time to create. You just have to drop songs. Like, he's just the worst.
He's the worst.
So he's the enemy of artists, as I think of him.
Yeah.
But also what you just said, like, you better hurry up because you're going to age out of this business before you're 25. That's
and it's fine for aging rockers.
Right.
You know, like Mick Jagger. It's just it's not equal.
Yeah, no, it's a double standard.
Yes, exactly. Let's just call it what it is.
And also, it's like, I remember the Guardian's, one of their music reviewers, Alex Petratis, I think. I remember reading a review he made of Glastonbury a couple of years ago. And I'm not even going to say the artist's name who he slandered, in my opinion, mm-hmm. but it was an older woman, mm-hmm. incredibly successful, beloved rocker, who he described in her appearance at Glastonbury that she was past her shelf life. Oh my God. It's like, dude.
I just had Shirley Manson of Garbage mm-hmm. on Shiro's, and she talks about, actually explicitly in one of her songs, about a journalist telling her that she should retire.
Oh God.
And it reminded me of that when you yeah. just shared that. I was like, that's yeah. got to be a male journalist,
yeah,
right?
No, it was.
I mean, oh, God. You know, yeah. it's, again, we could spend the entire episode talking about this, and we won't, I promise, but it does get me fired up. And I do think about how important it is, not that you should be making music to make a point or that it needs to be on our shoulders to provide visibility and representation, but that's kind of what it is.
And also, when that journalist asked me, why are you still doing this kind of thing? I couldn't exactly explain it to him, but what I wanted to say without sounding like I was puffing myself up, mm-hmm. I believe this, there's no way I could have written these songs when I was in my 20s or even in my 30s or even perhaps in my 40s. It's taken me all of these years to hone my craft, to be able to feel that this is the best work I've ever done.
Yeah.
And to really believe that and to feel that way in a deeply proud and meaningful way, not in a angry way, you know, but just, this is what I know about myself. I know this. And so again, it's like if that journalist had perhaps thought about it maybe in that way, like, oh, you've been doing this a very long time and now you've reached this place where you can say this about your craft and it must make you feel good, as opposed to why are you still doing this? Right. So it's just, there's so many ways of looking at it, you know, that makes one ponder.
It does make one ponder. And also I think it's important to state why you are still doing this and that you are still here.
Right.
And thank God you're still here. You know what I mean? Like, what a gift. And like, honestly, like, you're talking about how there's so much more to do. There's so much more to say, how you're finally reaching this point. It's like, why would you stop now
right.
when you're like peaking, you know, like,
or let's hope that you haven't peaked and that you are just, again, you're in a different season of life. You have so many different ways of thinking about it, viewing it, expressing it, addressing it, all of those things. And these are valuable points of view, whoever they come from.
That's right.
And we should celebrate all of us who have reached this point. And personally, I just feel so grateful, like I said, that yeah. I'm still able to do this and that people want to hear what you have to say. It's deeply humbling.
Let's talk a little bit about the experience of recording the record. Again, with all of those years of experience doing this in probably so many different ways with mm-hmm. so many different bands and different producers mm-hmm. and different rooms and studios. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about recording the record.
So I was fortunate enough to do a project last year with two artists that I revere from Scotland, Julie Fowlis and Corinne Polwart.
Gorgeous record.
Thank you. It's called Looking for the Threat. And we actually started talking about it during the pandemic. It was, again, a lot of time on our hands. And I asked Julie and Corinne if they'd be interested in working together. And thank goodness for me, they said yes. And so we spent some wonderful retreats getting together and working towards this record. And when we were casting about for, you know, who should we anoint to be our guide, you know, our producer, Josh Kaufman's name was the top of the list. Mm-hmm. We all love the work that he's done in all the different incarnations that he has been a part of. And again, thankfully for us, he said yes. And I just loved that experience so much working with Josh. That was the first time I had ever worked with him. And I knew that my own record was coming up and I asked him if he would do it. And again, thank goodness he said yes. Yeah. And it was wonderful to go back to real world. You get together with different people and you're all in the same room. And, you know, nowadays it really is a privilege to be able to record head on and not, you know, phone in your parts and all of that. And it was one of the most marvelous times of my life. And I just live for it. It was great. And I love the record that we made. I think Josh is a remarkable person. I think he's the most open-hearted person I think I've ever met. With Josh, I just always felt supported. He was always just saying, just tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what you want to do. I remember in particular, before we even entered the studio, he asked me, what have you never had on your record that you always wished you would?
That's an amazing question.
It was sort of like, what do you want for Christmas?
Yes. What was the answer?
Well, the answer in that moment was, you know, I've always wanted to have sort of like a chamber horn section on some songs, because it's like, when you hear horns, to me, it's like, oh, swoon.
I know.
Oh, swoon. It's like an emotional sort of, oof, you know, it just takes you somewhere. And so in that moment, I remember saying that to him. And sure enough, he brought me Christmas on some of the songs with beautiful horns.
And
it's just very subtle, but it's there. And I love it.
Can we play one of those songs right now? Which one do you think?
Saving Things has horns on it. How about Saving Things? Saving Things.
You want to set this song up for us?
I can do that. I love Nick Cave, and he has endured extraordinary sadness and loss in his life.
Yes.
And people may know him through the Red Hand Files website, where he answers questions of all sorts of subjects. He's deeply articulate, spiritual, just a remarkable person in my mind. And I remember him talking about how his wife, Susie, when they would reflect upon, you know, they lost their son. And again, I'm paraphrasing, so, you know, I'm not getting the quote exactly right. But he said something to the effect of that Susie, when she dreams, it's like she thinks of her dreams as saving things. And that line just kind of jumped out at me. And I started to think in my mind, what are mine? What are my saving things? What are the things in life that feel like they nurture me, they heal me, they save me, they protect me, they are talismans, their emotions, their items, their experiences, their adventures, their memories, they represent all sorts of things. And I started kind of writing a list. And that song is essentially a list of my personal saving things, the things that help me, even if I'm not even aware of them sometimes, you know, like they're in your subconscious or whatever, but they're everything from a cup of coffee to the things that are on my mantle to having a day where I feel kind of vulnerable and I'm in the supermarket and someone smiles at me. Things like that. So that song means a lot. And, so saving things. It's emotional.
Is it okay if we talk about what's making you emotional?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know why. You know, that hasn't happened to me before since I've been talking about this, but
I have that effect on people. I should have warned you. We might shed a tear or two.
I get teary. You know, I don't know. I think it's because it goes deep and it talking about the things that matter. Talking about, you know, just in the context of the song, the things that are the life preservers and that are the things that when everything feels like and you are able to call a friend, see something in your house that comforts you, the things that inspire you. I've recovered now, but, you know, just the things that mean something.
Yeah.
That's just not something I toss off. It just goes deep. That's what I'm trying to say.
A journal that keeps all confessions, hope like the rarest of possessions, a light that's left on by the door, a feeling of meaning, nothing more. Cup of coffee, a vintage locket, bandana in your jeans back pocket, a song you know backwards and forwards at the top of your lungs. Here comes the chorus, the sound of rain on a roof that sings, first day in ages that feels like spring, a arriving at the end of your wanderings. Don't forget, don't forget the saving things. A photograph taped to a mirror, the proof that once we all were here. Scent of smoke curling from a candle next to the souvenirs on the mantle. A stranger's smile and old friend's laughter. Letting go of what does not matter. Radio's murmur in a midnight kitchen. The things that you notice when you stop to listen. The gems that shine from a passed down ring. Love letters tied up with a string, wild flowers fit for a king. Don't forget, don't forget the saving things.
That's the saving things. Amazing song. Paul's about midway through, in fact, exactly midway through the new Mary Chapin Carpenter album, Personal History, her 17th gorgeous studio album. I'm here with her on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. We're shedding a couple of tears, which is great. Tears are cleansing. It's a full moon today.
It is. And you know, when people come up to me, I just was thinking about this. When I'm fortunate enough, the people tell me how they feel and they say, oh, X song, that makes me cry. And I look at them, I go, oh, I'm so glad. I love it.
Yeah.
When people, I mean, it's like they're connecting to it in some way. I'm not glad that they may feel unhappy, but I think what they're saying is that it touches them in some way, and the experience is to have a tear or two. And I feel humbled by that and grateful to know it.
I mean, it's one of your gifts. When you were talking about the saving things, and I was kind of following you in this cinematic way through your house, even though I have zero idea what your house looks like, but I'm having my own movie, you know. And I was thinking about a word that was repetitive through these songs.
Coffee.
Coffee was one.
Yeah, it shows up a lot.
And loneliness, lonely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I get strength from hearing stories of fellow solo, creative, strong women. I get strength from women standing in that and not apologizing for it. And I want to thank you for that. And again, it's one of these stigmas. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship to all of that and being a solo woman?
Well, I think, first of all, I would zoom out and try to speak about it in terms of, you know, a wider life, not just the music career, whatever.
Sure.
And that is that, you know, again, speaking to the culture we live in and the way we're perceived and stuff, it's almost like you don't admit that you're by yourself or that you're unmarried or unpartnered or whatever it is, because it's as if it's something to be ashamed of, as opposed to that's just the way life turned out. It's like, that's crazy to feel that you can't address it and present it as this is part of my story. You know, I feel like I've always written about what it feels like to experience loneliness. And obviously there's a very big difference between solitude and loneliness.
Yes.
And I get a great deal of sustenance from solitude, and I learn a lot from loneliness. That's how I would describe those two different things that are related. And I've had times in my life where I felt like I would just expire from loneliness, and then they pass. And then I've had times in my life where if I could not get enough solitude, I thought I'd go crazy. So it's like all these up and down environments, you know?
Yeah.
And all I can really say is that I have a core group of friends who have known me forever, and they know how I am and who I am and what I am. And I feel completely accepted by them, and I can call them anytime and say, I'm having a really blue day. I don't know why. Maybe I'm feeling lonely. Maybe I'm hungry. Maybe I'm just cranky. I don't know. And, you know, again, not to make it all tidy and everything, but I was just thinking of the first lines of the last verse in the title song of Personal History, where it says, how did you feel when you felt so lonely that you never believed you'd be whole again? And there were moments during the pandemic where, I mean, I went for months without being in another human being's space in real life, as opposed to a screen. Mm. And, you know, there were times when I know so many people who felt that way, you know, just like, oh my God, how will I ever feel like myself again? And the truth is that even before the pandemic, I would have those deep, dark periods of loneliness. But I think it's just the way I'm made. And it's the way I've always felt, you know, for as long as I've been conscious of how I feel. It's like I just have those episodes. And sometimes it makes you feel like a freak. And sometimes it leads to greater understanding and empathy and self-care and all of those things. But like I said earlier, it's just sometimes it is something that I take from, and other times something I swerve to avoid, you know. but it's part of life. It's part of being human, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Oh my gosh. And what I would respond to what you said about it resonating in your life, whatever. Anytime I think we recognize other people who seem to be experiencing the same things we feel, let's face it, it makes us feel less alone.
Yes.
And so we're drawn to that. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness we are. And thank goodness we find people who can reflect our own experiences and make us feel less unique in those harder times.
Well said. So you were talking about this record that you made, Looking for the Thread. Mm-hmm. Three women singing together.
Right.
I think this is another thing that I kind of love about you, because I love to see women working together.
Yeah.
You have, over the course of your career, from basically the beginning, worked with and also uplifted other women. I think about, I mean, I know that you didn't do this intentionally, but essentially that friendship that happened between you and Lucinda gave her her first Grammy.
I had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Because she had
you did, though.
Well, she had an amazing song.
She had an amazing song.
That, you know, that all happened because, you know, back in the Stone Age, back in the last century, Roseanne Cash, Lucinda Williams, and myself, we went to Australia to do, like, you know, in the round kind of thing. And I, you know, revere both of them so much. And it was so exciting to be a part of that. And every night we'd be on stage together and swapping songs. And, you know, I'd play along and try to accompany them. And
please bring that back, by the way.
I would love to.
Okay.
If Roseanne and Lucinda hear this, let's do it again. But every night, you know, Lucinda would sing Passionate Kisses, you know, and sing harmony and play along. And after every show, we'd walk off the stage and I would tackle her in the hallway and slobber all over her face and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, and I love that song. And finally, kidding, but I'm not kidding. There are no jokes, Dr. Freud. I think she finally just got weary of being slobbered all over. And she said, oh, for God's sake, just record that song. And I said, okay, I will. Literally exactly what happened. And every night that I get to sing that song, I get to inhabit this extraordinary vessel of a song for three some minutes. And it's empowering, and it's moving, and it's inspirational. It's just a wonderful experience every night that I get to sing that song. And she gave me that gift. So I think of it like that.
You've maintained these friendships all these years?
Well, we don't see each other very often. In fact, it's been a long time since I've seen Lucinda, although we did tour together like about 5 years ago, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And Roseanne, I've seen, you know, intermittently at different events and that sort of thing. But again, I hold them both up as representations of grace and smarts and brilliance and truth. You know, it's not a secret why they're so beloved as artists and musicians, writers, creators. There's no secret.
Can I share something with you?
Sure.
So a few years ago, actually, I think it was the first interview ever that I did for Shiro's, now that I'm thinking of it, was with Roseanne. And we were talking about relationships between women in this industry. Because there is like a scarcity mentality, I think even to this day, some women have this like competitiveness, or there can be only one, or the industry wants to pit you against each other.
Or the way the radio
there is only one slot. Yes. Now,
but back when I was coming up, that wasn't the case. There was lots of women being played. I don't know when it changed or the research dictated something, but it's just so ridiculous the way it is now.
It's terrible.
Like, oh, we have that one slot filled. There's no more room.
I'll tell you something. Yeah. I've been in those rooms.
God, it is so depressing.
Worst. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you've seen change vis-a-vis women? I'm putting this in air quotes because I just really have an issue with the women in music thing, but how else do you say it?
Well, I mean, there's a part of me that, even though I'm, you know, in the music business, I think I have a somewhat distant relationship with the daily machinations of the industry, in air quotes.
Sure.
You know, the business, whatever.
Yes.
You know, it's like you take what you need and leave the rest kind of thing. So in a way, I don't know if I'm going to use the word qualified or just tuned in enough to have a strong opinion or a strong sense of what's different, other than the things that we've touched on briefly, like, you know, the charts that I haven't, you know, chased charts for a very long time, you know, or had a place on them. So they don't really mean that much to me. But when I hear anecdotally, or, you know, someone brings it to my attention, like this ridiculous environment now where there's like one or two slots for for women on whatever the chart is.
Whatever the chart is, that's right.
And it's like, I just think they're missing the boat. Like, come on, you know? But, you know, I don't know how it got that way. I don't know what happened. And was it that guy who used to be the head of the Grammys or something who said something like, women need to step up? Right. You know, it's like, again, dude.
Yeah.
You know? And I think obviously he was proven wrong very quickly, or proven ignorant.
He's no longer there.
He's no longer there, right? And let's just also speak to the different world we live in now, which there's a fire hose of content, information, competition for eyeballs, attention, all of those things. You couldn't possibly keep up if you were, you know, even just invested day to day. There's so many great women artists. Not all of them, sadly, get the opportunities or the chances or have the people supporting them that would help them become more visible, more successful, whatever. Is that why? I don't know. Is it because there's just so much, so many things vying for our attention, so many records being released, so many delivery systems for content? I don't know, but I'm imagining that it's all of those things, everything, everywhere, all at once,
right,
that makes it hard for everybody.
For everybody, sure.
But I know you're asking me what has changed, and I just don't think I have a tidy answer for that.
I'm Carmel Holt, and you're listening to She Rose Radio. More with Mary Chapin Carpenter after the break. Stay with us.
Stepping away one more time from Shiro's Radio. How are you doing today? I'm Malachi Coons. We'll get you right back to more from the program here on KAXE, where support comes from the Lake Country Journal, a lifestyle magazine since 1997, a local publication sharing stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country. LakeCountryJournal.com. Do you rely on KAXE? Are you at least 70 and a half years old? Supporting KAXE's future is easy. Ask your financial advisor to set up charitable IRA distributions to KAXE. Questions? Can call Chris at 218 866-326-1234. On the River is our volunteer-hosted mix of folk, rock, jazz, blues, and world music on KAXC 7 days a week. Trained community members choose the music every weekday at 1 and 7, plus Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 1. A big shout-out to all of our dedicated volunteers. Now let's get you back to Shiro's Radio.
If you're just joining us, this is Shiro's Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt. And this week we have a super special edition of our Radio Hour featuring an in-depth conversation with the iconic award-winning singer and songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter, celebrating her newest and 17th studio album, Personal History.
I think about the era that you came up in as like this golden time, like Sean Colvin and you and Roseanne Cash and Lucinda. That moment was amazing. Like you're saying, like women were all over the radio.
Right.
And then I'm even thinking about the early to mid 90s and the Lilith Fair, feminist movements in music everywhere. You also wrote so many songs that were categorized as feminist anthems. See, you're rolling your eyes.
Yeah, just because I never thought of it like that.
Right.
I just didn't. I remember when we finished, the album was Come On, Come On.
Yeah.
And it had a song called He Thinks He'll Keep Her on it.
She packs his suitcase, she sits and waits with no expression upon her face. When she was 36, she met him at their door. Said I'm sorry, I don't love you anymore. Everything runs right on time. Years of practice and design. Spin and polish till it shines. He thinks he'll keep her. Everything is so benign. Safest place you'll ever find. God forbid you change your mind.
I wrote that song with my buddy Don Schlitz, and I can't tell you over the years how many fellows have come up to me or told me via, however, letters or social media.
Yeah,
I understand that the protagonist in that song is a woman, but that is the story of my life as well. And I thought that was wonderful. And I remember when we recorded the song and turned the album in, there were a few people in the marketing department of Sony, at my label at the time, who said, we're nervous about releasing this song because it sounds like a man bashing song. And I was like, oh, for f***ing sake.
Oh my God.
You know, but I had to say, no, it's not a man bashing song. And sure enough, it was like one of the most successful songs off the record. It resonated with a lot of different people.
I did want to give you a big old shout out for your podcast.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Hope is a Muscle.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. And the 3-part series that you did with Sarah Kay.
One story. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for that.
I remember, I think it was in the Sarah Kay conversations, you talked about your fear of running out of time.
Yes.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that
fear? Yeah, I absolutely can. And you know, it's a real feeling. I don't know where it comes from. It's not like something happened that triggered that feeling. It's just the way I've felt for a long time. Feelings of mortality and existential thoughts. Or maybe it comes from a positive place of like, I just have lots of ideas and I want to make sure I act on them and not procrastinate and not to make a tidy tie back to the new record. But the last song is called Coda, and it's the last verse that's deeply meaningful to me. The idea that at this time in my life, maybe all the loud noise and bright lights of life may not be as loud and as bright any longer, but it doesn't mean that this time of life isn't rich and beautiful and important and worth savoring. And the last verse tries to break it down in a real sort of quotidian way, like your mornings are sitting there with a quiet cup of coffee, a moment of peace and gratitude and an appreciation for all that's come before, certainly all that is present now, but also believing that what is unknown and unseen about the future is something to welcome and to embrace. And that in the end, what matters most is feeling loved, being loved, and giving love to the people in your life. And that's the roadmap to me, and that's what matters most. And that's what that song tries to express. And that's why it belonged at the end of the record as a way of not so much tying it all up, but just saying, to be continued.
I'll remember the saving graces and those old Super 8s where we raced like sparks down the sand. The bargain life insists upon, for you and me, we just get one. It's always been out of our hands. But after life's big acts and its interludes, our quiet mornings of coffee and gratitude, and a coda without words, and the poetry of birds, and the wild and brave and shining hearts you matter to.
Would you like a magic wand?
Thank you. I'm taking it from you. Okay.
It's a Shiro's magic wand.
Okay.
So we're making wishes about what we would like to see change in music, mm-hmm. for women, for non-binary folks, for queer folks, for BIPOC folks, for people who are not equally represented.
Yes.
It's kind of a first thought, best thought, first wave of the wand. Mm-hmm. What would you change?
Well, if it is a magic wand and it has magic powers, I would want to change everything you just said. You know, that may seem like an easy answer, but I would want all of those people, those humans, to have the light shine on them that they deserve.
Yes.
And the access to opportunities that they deserve. And the ugliness and the intolerance and the ignorance of this world towards people, whoever they are, to disappear.
Mary Chapin Carpenter, thank you for being with us on Shiro's. What an honor. Please do come back.
I'd love to.
With thanks again to Mary Chapin Carpenter. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Massive thanks once again to Mary Chapin Carpenter for being with us on this special edition of Shiro's Radio. Her 17th studio album, Personal History, is out now on 30 Tigers. Catch Mary Chapin out on tour this fall with special guest Brandi Clark. All tour dates at marychapincarpenter.com. Today's episode was recorded backstage with thanks to the Bardavon Opera House in Poughkeepsie, New York on August 9th, 2025. Hear the full version of this interview on the Shiro's podcast, which is available everywhere you get your podcasts. And that does it for this week's edition of Shiro's Radio. Thank you, as always, for tuning in, wherever you may be listening. Together, let's keep turning up the volume. Shiro's Radio is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Download and subscribe to the Shiro's podcast and our new YouTube channel, Shiro's Productions. Shiro's is 100% independent and is made possible through the support of our public radio affiliates, and now listeners just like you, through a new partnership with the nonprofit AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We've just kicked off our very first fundraising campaign. You can support us by texting SHEROES to 53555. That's 53555 to make a tax-deductible donation through AIR, or visit SHEROESradio.com. Thank you in advance for supporting Shiro's. And until next time, remember that music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.
KEXE was first on the air in 1976. Recently, a couple of the founders, Rich and Susie McClear, stopped by to talk about why KEXE was needed then. Come and listen
in to the radio. A lot of people were up here thinking they were doing their own thing. And when the radio station came on the air, they found a neighbor was doing the same thing, or somebody across town, and it magically became there are a lot of us up here that have the same thoughts, the same activities.
Neighbors talking to neighbors. We help them get in contact with each other and talk to each other about common problems.
KAXE is still needed now. We're connected through green cheese trivia, through great music and events. We're in crisis mode. We have had all of our funding cut from the federal government. Please help us out. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. I'm Heidi Holton. Thank you.